Iconic.ai's synthetic data platform equips developers with the data they need to build products effectively while achieving compliance and security. Shorten development cycles, eliminate cumbersome data pipeline overhead, and mathematically guarantee the privacy of your data with Tonic.ai. Please visit tonic.ai/stackoverflow for more information. Head on over to that link and let them know the show sent you. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Stack Overflow podcast, a place to talk all things software and technology. I am Ben Popper, Director of Content here at Stack Overflow, joined, as I often am, by my wonderful colleagues and collaborators, Ryan Donovan and Cassidy Williams. Hey, y'all.
Hello.
Hey.
So today's episode is in some ways near and dear to my own heart. We are going to be talking with a great guest, Liam, about his experiences, education in China and the US, and then working in those two countries, and then trying to bring the two together. My path to Stack Overflow took me from tech reporting to working at a Chinese company and traveling back and forth between the US and Shenzhen a lot, and then to Stack Overflow. So I have a small bit of experience with this, not as much as our guest, but it was fascinating and in a lot of ways, like sort of awe-inspiring to go to Shenzhen and just see the way they worked there, the way that things were vertically integrated from the engineers and the programmers all the way through to the factories and to their supply chain. And DJI, I think, is still, you know, sort of far and away the leader in its consumer electronics category, which is interesting. All right. So without further ado, Liam, welcome to the Stack Overflow podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, Benjamin. Thank you, Ryan and Cassidy. I'm Liam. I'm the founder and CEO of Immersive.
Yeah, tell us a little bit who you are and what is Immersive.
Sure. I was born and raised in China, and then I went to the U.S. for college. I studied computer science at UC Berkeley and graduated in 2014. After graduation, I briefly worked in the U.S. for a year and a little more in the Silicon Valley. I worked as an experience designer at LinkedIn and then a product manager at Totango, which is an Israeli startup company. Then back in 2015, I came back to China and founded my first company called Zaihui. Last year, I left my previously started company and founded my current company, Immersive. We are set to be the live stream design and production tool for the future content creators. Yeah, that's how I spent my past 30 years.
And so I guess, tell us a little bit about what it was like trying to work between those two cultures. For example, on the education front, you know, were there things that you recognized when you got to Berkeley that were familiar or different? Did you have to adapt your style of learning for computer science?
Yeah. So, you know, when I came to Berkeley at my 18, I got a very strong cultural shock. The way we study in China was very submissive or compliant. We just, you know, do homework and try to get a higher grade. But I think Berkeley is a pretty open and innovative place. I got to take, you know, many different courses. And starting my first year, I took like, you know, more than 20 different courses. And then I focused on the area that I was mostly fascinated in, which is human-computer interactions. I love design, I love art, and also like studying human minds, which is, you know, the psychology. But then I think technology is the future, you know, 12 years ago. So I found a great intersection, which is human-computer interaction, that studies all these three areas at the same time. So my major was computer science, but my focus is HCI.
That's great that you got to explore a little bit. That was something where when I was in college, I was a part of this program to help international students practice their English and get more immersed in everything. And that was a pretty common thing where people said, I have a lot more creative choices in how I study, which I'm not used to.
Yeah. So just like overwhelmed by so many different choices. I was like, no, 4 years is totally not enough. I want us like 5 or 6 years studying all these undergrad courses because, you know, there's no way going back, but I can always go forward.
Right.
Yeah. And then in my first year, my English was not that well. So it took me nearly a year to ramp it up.
And so from there, you went to LinkedIn. What was your experience like working in Silicon Valley? What did you sort of learn from that? And, you know, what did you find that you were able to take? And, you know, were there things that you didn't like in particular about some of the Valley culture?
Sure. I think, you know, LinkedIn is a very typical large corporation in the Valley. So it's a typical enterprise company. The work-life balance is really good. We got unlimited PTOs and omnipotent healthcare insurance. The life was pretty laid back. I usually came to the office at 10 a.m. and then normally I leave before 5 p.m. So then the hours was, you know, perfect. I can spend, you know, nearly a half day of my, you know, life to explore anything else. So I, know, even started a side project. I couldn't call it a startup, but it's a side project. You know, do a lot of hiking. So yeah, even I think I was pretty welcome to work remote. Sometimes I took an overnight flight from California to Hong Kong or to Beijing. The internet over the air was pretty good, so I kept working on the plane. Uh-huh. Yeah, over. And also, I think working in LinkedIn or most of the large corporations, people follow very rigorous structure and procedure and best practices, right? So we do a lot of research for our design projects. We try to come up with many solutions to pick before going forward. So the research was very rigorous. And then we do a lot of review sessions for, for the PRD, for the spec, for the design, even for the code reviews. So when the design, got some challenge, they push back to, take more time to refine it before going forward. And I feel like at LinkedIn, we got an independent researcher roles. That role comes earlier compared to companies in China. Even very large corporations in China don't have independent researcher roles. So overall, yeah, my impression would be great work-life balance and very rigorous on all the procedures and practices. That's I would call it good, but very different from the practices in China.
Interesting.
The work-life balance sounds a little different from what I've heard with the 996. working system.
Yeah, we definitely want to get to work-life balance as part of the show. But just to touch on a bit of what you said, my experience at DJI was wonderful in many ways, and they did do a lot of sort of research and development. But as you kind of pointed out, that always then ran through sort of the central decision-making apparatus of the senior executives and the founder to decide, do I like this or not? And more of their gut feeling and their decision versus putting it into the hands of independent researchers or user testers before launch.
Yeah, and many of the times the researchers are trying to prove that the boss are right. It's like internal consulting. Yeah, many of the decision-making process are not that transparent and rigorous, I would say.
So yeah, I guess maybe tell us a little bit then about why you made the decision to leave the Valley and to go back home and found a company and, what it was like to return there and try to work in that mode.
I would say like in 2015, that year, there was a boom, right, in the stock market and in the investment sector. So especially the internet companies in China at that time was, fast, was growing super fast. A lot of new O2O companies, mobile solution companies just started at that time. So I would say I realized that that's a perfect time for me to start up a company. And because, China, I was definitely more familiar with the China market. And, there are way more funding going to the market. So it's like a no-brainer for me if I want to start up a company. Like compared to the U.S., I would have more resources and more recognitions and like even vacant market at that time. So it's that I don't want to stay in the great work-life balance because I think I was still young. I can try different things and try extreme things, be aggressive in my professional career path. So I want to do startup and then I do the comparison. I feel like China would definitely be a no-brainer because I would have a much better arbitrage and values in that market. So then I decided within only 1 week. I sold my houses and cars and then returned in a week.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know many people said I was done with work-life balance. I was sick of that. I was ready to burn out. So yeah, I guess maybe tell us a little bit about when you went there and started to found a culture and hire engineers there. Like, what were the things that you were able to rely on to drive that first company through the impressive growth that it had?
Yeah, so comparing the engineering cultures in China and the US, I would say Chinese engineers definitely hustle to execute. Sometimes you can call them outsourcers in some companies. They do the job very fast without even understanding the context, and they don't try to propose any ideas at all. They are super compliant to their product managers. So they just do it super fast, super focused. Yeah, and also I would say they just work harder. They just do a lot for their career accelerations, particularly for promotions like leadership and management. Some of them try to learn English because they are trying to adapt to new technologies. Definitely, the 996 is kind of ordinary, especially for like middle management. I heard people like work until like 11 or 12 every single day for several years. That's normal. And some tech leaders, they don't take any days off, even for the weekend. But in some instances, I would say like Chinese engineers are, compared to the US, they are more specialized into some focused and details problems. Because I think US engineers tend to think at a higher and more critical level of the business, the user pain points, the strategy and the market sizing. So they tend to challenge, they tend to think big, higher. But, you know, as a compromise, they tend not to delve into details, the technical details or any sort of details. So that's why you can tell most of the China's internet products are very complicated and also powerful, because there are tens of people, you know, working on very specific different projects all at the same time. And I see many, many Chinese engineers, they, you know, I wouldn't say it's bad for them when they don't care about the context and business of a product, because they don't want to spend time thinking about that. And instead, they want to spend, you know, tons of time just studying and researching the very specific technical solutions. So I would say it's kind of a craftsmanship for, you know, for the sort of details. And there's also a very interesting comparison that in the US, as I said before, people tend to do a lot of product research, innovation research, and design research before pushing to the development. Because in I think in the Valley, especially, engineers are harder to hire, to find, and to retain, and way more expensive. So they try to, you know, restrain the usage of this resource, human resource. But in China, there are millions of new grads every single year. So they don't want to do research beforehand, but they, you know, do extensive A/B tests all the time. So when we have, you know, three different solutions, you know, just develop all of them and see how the users react. And, you know, due to the huge population in China, you have tens of users all the time. So it's easy to see the results when you, you know, push all the solutions to production and get a very straightforward answer for that. So that's kind of interesting as well.
There's pros and cons to both approaches. I feel like it's interesting to think about, like, well, yeah, if I were in China, this would happen a lot faster. But then if I were in the US, maybe we would make it work in a certain way sooner because we did that research up front. I could see how there's benefits to both styles.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Again, it takes me back to my time at DJI. They always had a new crop of young engineers. They had their robotics tournament. They would hire, you know, 10,000 engineers right out of college every year who were eager and willing to take the place of the people who are moving on or moving up. And then to your point about A/B testing, right? Like a lot of times they would release so many products so fast that it was like the only products they were competing with were their own. But as you said, it didn't matter. They were just like, let the consumer decide, like, we'll keep pushing it out. You know, like very focused on, like you said, the technical specifications, like making, just going higher, 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 tuning it higher, higher, higher.
Yes, yes, exactly. And that also enriched to a higher level that in many, many Chinese companies, when we try to develop, you know, one direction of a product, they have like 5 teams or 10 teams developing the same product at the same time. Or I mean, at least the same direction at the same time. And they want to see which team wins.
So I guess now you have a new company. Maybe let's talk a little bit about it. And it's near and dear to our hearts, especially Cassidy does live streaming too. The idea is to create stuff that will help creators doing video and live video, building an immersive or personalized sort of streaming platform. Like, tell us a little bit about your new company and the idea, and then maybe we can talk about how you're trying to bring together the best of both US and Chinese in your hiring and in your company.
Sure, sure. So at Immersive, we're trying to develop this live stream design production tool for the content creators. And when we say design production, it's something similar to, an analogy would be Canva and Figma for live stream. So Canva does a great job for democratize design for non-professionals, right? Like professionals use Photoshop and Illustrators. These softwares are super powerful, but very hard to learn. And these softwares don't inspire people to design, right? They assume as a designer, you know what to design, and we give you the tool to make it happen. But Canva, you know, they provide lots of templates and assets. So even if you're not a designer, if you don't have that taste of design, you can, you know, choose from, you know, tons of solutions to come up with a not so bad solution very fast. So that's one inspiration. The other one would be Figma. So Figma replaces Sketch and Illustrator in the sense that they can collaborate at the same time. And as we see the live streaming booms, keeps booming, there are more and more advanced contents coming up. And some of the, you know, higher level contents require, you know, multiple people working at the same time to deliver that quality. One single person cannot drive everything all together. So we are a web-based product. So that different people, different like producers and hosts and speakers, different roles can collaborate the design together. Some of the people in charge of, you know, maybe the audio, and some of them in charge of the layouts, and some may take charge of the interaction with the audience. Yeah. So we are very much like Canva and Figma for live stream for non-professionals, but who really care about the quality of their contents.
That's awesome. I would love to play with it. It sounds like anything to make this kind of stuff easier to do, because there's so many softwares out there, but it's challenging and there's like a big learning curve. And there's so many people I know who want to start live streaming, but I have no idea where to start because the tools are so difficult to use.
Yeah, we can definitely feel the pain point. Every time I look at Cassidy's setup with her great camera and her lights, I wish there was a tool that made it easy for me to look half as good. So yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things we talked about before, Liam, is that you're hiring on both sides. You're trying to run a remote first company. So talk to us a little bit about hiring engineers, both from the US and China, maybe from other countries as well, since it's remote. And, you know, the way you're trying to marry these two, in some ways, very disparate, very different, you know, engineering cultures.
So we're trying to combine, you know, the pros of both China and US practices to form this kind of crazy hybrid. We think the best practices in the US would be, you know, breakthrough innovation. I think people in the US, and especially in the Valley, when they start a company, they want to make a 10 times better innovative idea. If it's not 10 times better, they won't even try to start this company. They don't want a, you know, a very simple copycat. They want a breakthrough innovation. But, you know, in China, many, many people, most people try to just do a copycat and do like 1.5 times better, slightly better, and more integrations, stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, so I would say if I want to go global, I would definitely embrace this sort of innovation. And especially, I feel like consumers in the US, they appreciate innovative new products a lot more than users in China. I had this sort of pain that back in 2015, we developed, you know, very kind of innovative product in China at that time. But our customers were the restaurant owners. They just want to pick a cheaper product. Even it's very hard to use, even it's, you know, it looks ugly, they don't really care. I think everything they are trying to make a decision would be, the first is price. The second would be all in one. Even in day one, even they are a small business, they said, okay, I cannot use your product along with Alexi other product at the same time. I want to, you know, one product does everything. So it's not really friendly for a startup as well. But in, I would say, like for global markets, for developing a best of the breed product, you definitely need 10 times better aggressive innovation. So that's something we are trying to learn from the US practices. So everybody are trying to be more innovative, more creative, more critical, and try to challenge each other more to generate absurd ideas. And that, you know, maybe one of them would work. So, but for the Chinese practices, I'll definitely pick the, you know, the hustling and hardworking practice. We want to move fast and break things. I think that's one of the few advantages Chinese companies, Chinese engineers still keep. Yeah, probably within the same size, but like, you know, of about 10 to 20 engineers, but we are trying to ship things, you know, like maybe two times faster than our competitors. So it's kind of interesting, right? How can you innovate along with fast building? That's the problem we are trying to solve. So far, it looks fine. We found we found a balance. We're not practicing like 996. That's crazy. You don't have any time to retrospect, to think through, to create. But still, we work, you know, more hours than most people in the US. Therefore, we do have, you know, some buffer to innovate, to create, to be inspired.
All right, everybody, it is that time of the show. I'm going to shout out the winner of a lifeboat badge who came on Stack Overflow and helped to save a question from the dustbin of history, spread a little knowledge around the community. Awarded yesterday to ABHIJIT, not going to try to pronounce that, set difference versus set subtraction. All right, if you're curious, we have an answer for you in the show notes. I am Ben Popper. I'm the director of content here at Stack Overflow. You can always find me on Twitter at Ben Popper. Email us with questions or suggestions, podcast@stackoverflow.com. And if you enjoy the show, leave us a rating and a review. Really helps.
I'm Ryan Donovan. I edit the blog here at Stack Overflow. You can find me on Twitter at @RThorDonovan. And if you have a great idea for a blog post, please email me at pitches@stackoverflow.com.
I'm Cassidy Williams. I'm head of developer experience and education at Remote. You can find me at Cassidoo, C-A-S-S-I-D-O-O, on most things.
Hi, I'm Liam Zhao. I'm the CEO and founder of Immersive. You can find me on LinkedIn and Twitter. I search on Liam Zhao. LinkedIn would be the best place to find me and talk to me. Thank you.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you soon.
Bye.